Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time. It's time for GGN Live.
For the block, boy. Take it rough.
Every day has been the same old thing on my block. Welcome, Gangrene Nation, to a long-anticipated return of the podcast. At least I hope it was long-anticipated. But I'm Andrew, by the way, and I am with the boss man himself, John, and or John B. We're going to talk about everything that has gone on with the Jets over the past month or so, and there's been quite a lot. And John, I don't even know where to start. I mean, I guess if we're running some type of sports industry, we'd probably start with the quarterback position. So is Fitzpatrick the place you want to go, or would you rather talk about other things?
Well, let's start with Fitzpatrick.
All right, so as all Jet fans know, this storyline has been at the forefront of all the news and all the updates that are coming on surrounding the Jets for the past, I don't know, since the season ended. At the beginning of the offseason, people thought that the Fitzpatrick negotiations would be quite amicable just because Fitzpatrick has a history with Chan Gailey. Fitzpatrick was a big surprise last year. Everyone on the team seemed to like him. And it didn't seem like there was anybody else willing to give him a ton of money. So people thought that this deal would get done relatively quick. But as it turned out, it was probably the last remaining domino to fall in all of the NFL offseason. And we could talk about the contract. We could talk about all the fit with the team, if the Jets played it right. But the thing I want to start with is, do you see any repercussions, any difference with how things played out? The Jets signed Fitzpatrick at the beginning of the offseason as opposed to them signing him now. Would there be more positive repercussions? Or is there a negative aspect that is going to show itself because of maybe the Fitzpatrick missed OTAs or something in the locker room? Or is this all, again, just something that the media wanted to talk about for a couple of months because it's the dog days of the NFL offseason and there's not much else to talk about?
I think it probably leans on the side of not really making a difference. You know, Fitzpatrick's a veteran player. He doesn't really need the OTAs. He knows the system. He has chemistry with the receivers. You know, it makes for a good storyline. But at the end of the day, let's say Fitzpatrick had, you know, re-signed in March. He goes out and stinks the first five games. You think anybody's, you know, going to remember that? You think anybody's going to give him credit because he was amicable in his contract negotiations? No, people only care what happens on the field. He goes out and plays well. This will be a distant memory. If he goes out and stinks, everybody's going to want him benched. They'll want him gone next year. That would have been true no matter what when he signed. So I don't really think it's a big deal. As a general rule, I kind of like it when a guy like Fitzpatrick is out because it gives some of the younger guys some of the offseason reps. Those are the guys that really need it. You know, guys who are established, guys who know the system. I don't think the offseason really matters that much for him. And I think we've mentioned this in past podcasts, but I'm almost relieved when I see a veteran not taking part in the offseason program just because of how many times you hear about somebody suffered an injury in May at some practice, some freak non-contact thing. So it kind of takes that off the table. But, you know, back to the original point, I think people are making a big deal out of it. You know, people are saying, well, now he better perform. Well, you know what, if he went out and did not perform well, it's not going to make a difference when he signs.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you mentioned the point of it allows other people to get opportunities, one of those other people being Geno Smith. Does this whole contract negotiation make it more likely that the Jets would be willing to pull Fitzpatrick if he somehow reverts to his past form, not including last season, and like the Jets' tough schedule the first 5, 6, 7 weeks of the season? Does this make it more likely that we actually do see Geno Smith as opposed to what it would have been if Fitzpatrick just signed right away?
I don't think that they're necessarily going to be more inclined to bench Fitzpatrick. You know, if you think back to last season, they hit a rough stretch in the middle of the season where the team wasn't playing well and Fitzpatrick wasn't playing well. And, you know, right after that Houston game, that was really the first point where I think you could have made a case to bench him. If they were inclined to go to Geno Smith, I think they would have done it then. I think this is Fitzpatrick's team, you know, for better or worse this season. I think if he gets benched, it'll be at a point where the season is probably, if not beyond saving, close to beyond saving. And I think that's right. He played well enough to earn this job heading into training camp, and he played well enough to, you know, he played well enough for this to be his team in 2016. Now, we'll see what happens this year, you know, if he doesn't play well. He's not immune to being benched, but I think it would take something drastic. I think it would be, you know, if not at the point where the team was out of the race, but the point where the team was almost out of the race, I don't think that the Jets are necessarily going to be have a quicker trigger, though, to pull him. I mean, if anything, you know, these contract negotiations can be acrimonious at times, but that all melts away once the player is actually signed. I mean, how many times have we gone through this with Darrelle Revis where, you know, back in 2010, everybody was like, well, how's this team going to accept him? They accepted him fine. You know, after he was traded, oh, he's never coming back here. You know, after he goes to New England, well, he's definitely never coming back here. They come back, he comes back here, he gets welcomed back with open arms. You know, I think at the end of the day, once a player is in your locker room, all the contract stuff goes away. You know, that becomes a thing of the past.
And Revis was involved in another altercation that allowed the media to write their pages and file their stories in the middle of August. But maybe we'll get to that later. It depends on how much time we have, because again, there is a lot to talk about. You mentioned that you don't feel like it'll have to take something drastic for Fitzpatrick to be able to be benched early in the season. And I mean, I like to think that I'm an optimistic Jets fan, but I do think it is more likely than not that just based off last year about Fitzpatrick's schedule, that the good defenses he played, whether it be Houston or Buffalo, like they gave him troubles. He didn't really beat a great defense last year, play well against a great defense. He played well against New England in the second game. I don't know how great I would say last year's Patriots defense was. I'd say it was above average, but he didn't really have a crazy challenge to face last year. And opening the season this year with the Bengals, the Bills, the Chiefs, the Seahawks. I mean, I don't think the Steelers are going to be anything great on defense, but then the Cardinals. There is a scenario where Fitzpatrick just craps the bed. And what was the point of giving Geno all those reps last summer and giving him all those reps now? I mean, I'm also, again, I mean, I get yelled at a lot for this, but like I honestly think that Geno Smith could have put up 85 to 90% of the numbers that Fitzpatrick put up last year because he had the receivers that he's never had before with an offensive system that tailored to his strengths that Chan Gailey would do for him. That's something that Tony Sperano or whoever else they had running that. I mean, I don't think he ever played with Sperano, but Marty Morningweg had when he had the opportunity. I really do want to see what Geno has, but again, if it means the Jets are going to start off slow, I'd rather not see it at all. So it's sort of like a catch-22 there. But if Geno Smith is playing quarterback at some point this year, you're saying the season has been an automatic failure.
Well, not necessarily. You know, you could have a situation like Chad Pennington in 2002 where, you know, he comes in and all looks lost, and maybe, you know, it's possible he lights it up. But I think, you know, you're probably there. That 2002 team was right at the tipping point. So I think, you know, the scenario you're laying out, this team starts 1-5. Yeah, you're probably going to make a quarterback change. And if you want to know the truth, yeah, there is a real possibility Fitzpatrick regresses this year. This guy's not a great quarterback. There's a reason nobody was out there offering him the deal he wanted. This is a journeyman. He's a good guy. He's a spot starter. He's a hold the fork kind of guy. And I think what you're hoping is that he kind of has a late career renaissance where, you know, he's in the right system, he's on the right team, he's got the right receivers around him. And, you know, I think I kind of divide his season into two parts last year, where in the early part of the year, he was kind of just a placeholder. He was a guy who wasn't necessarily making a ton of plays for you. He was, you know, it's a cliche, but kind of that game manager type. But near the end of the year, I think his play really started to pick up, and this team started to play its best when they started relying on him. It became a passing team. You know, Powell emerged as a threat out of the backfield, and you look at some of the throws he made down the stretch to Marshall and Decker, where they just developed this uncanny sense of timing. So I think, you know, if you're looking at this Jets season, the best chance that they had has always been that was the start of something, you know, starting to click for Fitzpatrick. And that does happen from time to time for quarterbacks late in their careers. It's not, you know, but it's not a given. This is a guy, you know, his track record is what it is. It's not as bad as people make it out to be. You know, you read these, you know, read what some people say. He's like, this guy stunk for 10 years. Well, not really. I mean, over the last 6 years, he's been an average type quarterback. He's been okay. He hasn't been great. He hasn't been good enough to keep a job, but he's always been good enough to get a job. So the question is, you know, has he ticked up a little bit? And then can those receivers continue to help him out? You know, he's still going to have Marshall this year. He's going to have Decker. You've added Matt Forte out of the backfield. Maybe a guy like Amaro or a guy like Anunua can emerge. And, you know, suddenly you have a good passing game. So, you know, that's really the question. But at the end of the day, you know, he's entering the year as the starting quarterback. They gave him $12 million. This team is committed to him in 2016. They're not committed to him past 2016. But you're probably going to sink or swim with Fitzpatrick unless something drastic happens. Of course, as we all know, something drastic happened last year when the team looked like it was going to either sink or swim with Geno Smith. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what the future holds?
All right. So, let's say Fitzpatrick puts up about 85% of the numbers that he put up last year, but just adjusting for the schedule and adjusting for the weapons and everything else. What deal would you give him? I mean, is it based on what you think Hackenberg looks like, or what Petty, or I mean, Geno's gonna be a free agent, but Hackenberg's not gonna get any plays this year if the best case scenario plays out. But let's say he puts up 85%. Like, would you be willing to commit to him for a couple of years, or are we going to be going through this game again next offseason?
You know, that's a tricky question because we're talking about statistics, but the quarterback position is, you know, one where statistics don't really always tell the whole story. So, you know, if he's not putting up the same numbers he did last year, I'm inclined to think that, you know, the Jets probably have not had a successful season. But as you said, a lot of it comes down to how does Hackenberg looks like he's grown in practice? How does Petty look like he's grown? Because Fitzpatrick really is, you know, he's a pretty solid stopgap, which is, you know, he's probably somewhere around, I'd say, you know, maybe the 25th best quarterback in the league. But the gap between the 12th best quarterback and the 25th best quarterback, I think, is much smaller than the gap between the 25th and the 30th best. And, you know, for years, the Jets had somewhere around the 30th best quarterback, whether it was with Sanchez or whether it was with Smith. And it wasn't all their faults. You know, the team did a horrible job surrounding these guys, and these guys were young in their careers. But, you know, last year was the first time the Jets got quarterback play you could win with in a very long time. So unless you have a better option, you might have to stick with him again. But it's kind of tough to say, you know, how many games does the team win? You know, if the team wins 10 games again and Fitzpatrick looks pretty good, then yeah, I think maybe you'll sign up for another year. You know, even if he regresses a little bit, you'll have to see what the other options are because, you know, we also don't know who else might be available. We don't know where the Jets are going to be drafting. For all of our listeners out there, I'm going to give you a great answer and say it depends.
Wow, I don't like the nuance and the foresight. I just want hot takes coming at my face constantly, John, and you're not delivering. But you're right. When you're talking about the gap between the 12th and the 25th versus the 25th to the 30th, the Jets don't need Fitzpatrick to be the 12th best quarterback, because if all goes right, they'll have one of the best defenses in the league. They'll have two top-flight receivers who will make Fitzpatrick's job easier, and hopefully some young guy will step up on the offensive line, and maybe Clady will get back to form. But maybe they'll give Fitzpatrick some more time that he didn't have last year. But I think the defense is going to be better this year than it was last year. I don't know if I'm in the minority in that or if you agree with me, but I like the fact that Leonard Williams has another year. I expect him to take a jump. Lorenzo Malden's on one side, and by all indications, I mean, you could take it for what it's worth, but in camp, he seems to be impressing, and he's got a full-time position. I like Jordan Jenkins. I think he's a solid run-stuffing outside linebacker that you could put on at least the first two downs and maybe put his hand on the ground on fourth down and let him go get the quarterback. But the second cornerback slot is an issue too, but apparently D. Milner has shown some flashes, and then you got Marcus Williams, and the safeties are deep, and it allows Todd Bowles to set up a ton of different type of sub packages, whether it puts Rontez Miles on the field more, Deion Bailey on the field more, then of course Darren Lee, the first round pick. I really like the way McCagnan has structured this roster. And if a guy like Jason Morrow could step up, then maybe the offense will be as good as last year. So Fitzpatrick doesn't have a crazy expectation to be an Aaron Rodgers type guy where he makes his receivers better than they are. He could just be a complimentary guy, and the Jets could conceivably make a run. I mean, if you just look last year at Denver, I mean, Denver, I don't know if the Jets could get to that defense's level because that defense is one of the best of this era. But again, Fitzpatrick had a much better year than Peyton Manning last year, and the Broncos are able to win. So I think the NFL is, I mean, everyone says it's a parity league, and forever it's been a league of parity. But I think more than ever now, just because it feels like it's been harder to move the ball lately. Maybe that's just because the guys like Jordy Nelson were gone last year, which meant that the Green Bay's offense wasn't as explosive. And then Pittsburgh's guys are dealing with whatever it is they're dealing with constantly. And it's become easier. Easier might not be the word, but maybe it's become like more in vogue to just have the quarterback there and just load up on other positions. And that brings us to the next big story that we haven't covered yet, and that is the Muhammad Wilkerson extension. Muhammad Wilkerson, surprisingly, after not hearing anything for weeks about how hearing that negotiations have stagnated and that he hasn't heard from the team and that he's rehabbing his broken leg and these Twitter posts, Instagram posts showing that I'm healthy, the Jets agree to a 5-year, $86 million contract with $53 million guaranteed, but only 36.7 of it is fully guaranteed. We're not going to get into the minutiae of football contracts, but it seems to basically mean that for the first 2 years of this contract, the Jets aren't going to get out of it. And why would you want to? I mean, you're expecting Wilkerson to be a top flight guy for at least 2 years. It might be a little difficult to cut him in the third year because there's $9 million of dead money, but they would save $11 million off the cap. But then the next year, it would be more palatable in 2019 to cut him. But on my first glance, I think this is a very fair contract, at least for the Jets side, considering Fletcher Cox got over $60 million guaranteed. And maybe, with all the hand-wringing this whole offseason about how Maccagnan hasn't been doing his job and that the Jets aren't as player-friendly an organization as they used to be, I think this is a good deal for both sides, but I think the Jets might have gotten a great deal as opposed to Wilkerson, who just got his money.
I'm still stuck on when you said Ryan Fitzpatrick was better than Peyton Manning last year.
Really? That was like 4 minutes ago. I just ran for a long time.
Yeah, I haven't been able to get past that. First of all, because we actually said it. And second of all, because it actually was true. I mean, you told me that a year ago, I would probably laugh in your face. But to Wilkerson, this is another thing I can't get over is I'm sitting here and I see the Jets front office actually play the situation correctly when it comes to a star player. You know, like ever since I was growing up, this team's like trading all of its, you know, whenever the star wants a new contract, they're trading them, whether it's, you know, Keyshawn or Abraham or Revis. And it looked like we were heading in this direction again. And the thing I couldn't get over is how many people wanted to trade Wilkerson. And look, I understand you have Sheldon Richardson and I understand you have Leonard Williams. You know, there are two guys who could conceivably play similar roles and play them very effectively. But, I mean, this guy was the best defensive player on the team last year. You know, he registered double-digit sacks playing a role that doesn't necessarily lend itself to that. So that doesn't tell the whole story, just how much the guy dominates up front. And, you know, like, I kept hearing people talk about how, you know, oh, let's trade him for a second. I mean, you'd rather have a second-round pick than this player? I just couldn't figure that out. And so I was really pleased. I did not think it would get done. I kind of went into the season thinking Wilkerson would be playing under the tag. You know, Maccagnan handled this perfectly. He sat, you know, he didn't overpay. And, you know, he tried to get Wilkerson on a cheaper deal, and he saved his best offer till the very end. I think it's very difficult to dislike what the Jets have done here. And like I said, I'm just floored that the Jets actually had a front office that handles the situation correctly with a player. They didn't panic and trade him for 40 cents on the dollar at the draft and get, you know, a second round pick in exchange for an all-pro talent. It's a really good job. And, you know, I think back to when this deal was actually signed, there was a reader on our site, I think it may have been Macklin T, who said Maccagnan really needed something to go well just because of how quiet this offseason was. And, you know, the situation with Fitzpatrick was still dragging on at this point. And Darren Lee, the first-round pick, had not been signed yet. And, you know, the fan base was starting to get a little antsy, and that was always going to be the case. You know, when Maccagnan went on his spending spree in 2015, he pretty much built the 2015 and 2016 Jets, did not have a lot of flexibility heading into this season. So he needed something to kind of reassure the fans and get, you know, get everybody calm and just make it feel like things were heading in the right direction. So I think that this was it's a big deal. It sends that message that, you know, this team is going to lock up its stars. And that's an important thing. And that's what the smart teams in the NFL do. They don't let players like this get away. So, you know, I think it's really just I don't think it's a bargain for the Jets, but I don't think it's a bad deal either. I think it's, you know, the deal that's right about, it's just about right for both sides in, you know, the current, today's NFL market.
Right. But if especially in this market, if you feel that a team did okay with a star player, then I think it's a win. Because with the way that Olivier Vernon got paid this offseason, whoever these guys hit free agency, if Wilkerson hit free agency, he would have gotten more than what the Jets ended up giving him. I think we both could agree on that, just based off on the open market and having other bidders. But you mentioned that the Jets built last year's team and this year's team last offseason. By making this move, the Jets are actually over the cap in 2017 right now. If we just left the contracts as is. Yes, they could release Ryan Clady and save almost $11 million on the cap, and they could release Nick Mangold and save another $10, and they could restructure Marshall, and they could do all these things. But the cost of keeping Wilkerson, Williams, and Richardson is that you're going to have to make those decisions, but again, I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it just by watching the Broncos last year. To have that dominant front is going to allow the Jets to get away with a lot of other things. And it's especially in a division with Tom Brady, it makes a lot of sense with the way the Jets handled this. And yeah, it might not appease all those Madden players who like spending tons in free agency and getting new names. But like sometimes the star you have on your team, I mean, I guess the Jets just learned this, you know, the Jets just learned this apparently after what you said, after they traded all their guys. Like it's good to keep their star in house and their stars in house. And it sends a message to other people, to other players, that the Jets will take care of their guys. I mean, it might be acrimonious, but at the end of the day, things will get done. And it definitely gives off a more professional vibe than what the Jets have been known to be in the past.
Well, yeah, back to the point of, you know, the way things look for 2017 is, I think, you know, everybody's still scarred by the Mike Tannenbaum days where the team was close up against the cap. But this is not a similar situation because you actually have good players on this team. This is, you know, this is the kind of thing you run into with the salary cap, where you have to prioritize certain players when you actually have a talented roster. And, you know, it's unfortunate that you can't keep everybody who you'd like to keep. It's the thing good teams run into, where your players are actually coveted and you actually have players who are worth giving money to. This isn't, you know, the 2012 team where you have Calvin Pace and Mark Sanchez and Bart Scott and Eric Smith and even Wayne Hunter making way too much. I guess Wayne Hunter was gone in 2012, but, you know, it's a different situation where you're actually prioritizing because you have a lot of good players and you can't afford to keep them all. And this comes into whether Mike Maccagnan's going to be a successful GM over the long term. There are two things is, you know, some there comes a point where you're just going to have too many good players to be able to keep. So you're going to have to cut some guys, which means you're going to need cheap guys to be able to fill in. And cheap guys come through the draft. So the question is, will he draft enough players to succeed? And it also comes back to the quarterback position where, you know, and you know, you don't need a full roster if you have a quarterback who can make a difference. You know, a quarterback can pick up the one position where he can pick up a lot of the slack if you can't afford all of those good players. So, you know, I just want to make that point when we talk about the team being over the cap for 2017. We're not back to 2012 right now. It's a different situation. The 2012 team had a lot of high priced players who weren't even good. This year's team is much more talented, so you're in more of a prioritizing mode, which is the type of thing, you know, better teams tend to deal with.
Yeah, it's kind of an odd place for the Jets to be in, and it's a good place for the Jets to be in. And you mentioned the quarterback position. The most valuable thing to have on a roster, as the Seattle Seahawks can tell you, is a young, cheap quarterback who plays well and that you could fill out the rest of your roster and actually re-sign those guys. I mean, the Jets are trying to hit that, whether it be with Petty or Hackenberg. I mean, I don't know how likely it is that it's going to happen, but they hope that Hackenberg shows something and that maybe the Jets will have the best of both worlds. They'll be able to get rid of Fitzpatrick's number next year and Hackenberg will be the quarterback and they'll still be able to re-sign all their guys and maybe go after a big-time free agent. So I like that the Jets could head in many directions, and that if it turns out that the Jets somehow fall flat on their face this year, like they'll be able to cut Clady and Mangold and these veterans and get a ton of cap space. Or again, if they play well, they'll be able to keep them just by restructuring the deals. So McCagna has really, really set himself up well here, and the Jets' future looks a lot better than one might have expected a couple of months ago when these guys were still out on the free agent market and Wilkerson was unsigned and Darren Lee was unsigned. So it seems in the beginning of August, it seems that the future looks bright for the Jets. But you mentioned that having cheap young players is a very big advantage for a team to have. And I was just thinking about this recently, because in training camp or in preseason, we're always looking for those young guys to step up. There are guys like Jay Samaro who has shined in training camp, and he has the draft pedigree, and the role sort of seems to be there for the taking. And then you have a guy like Freddie Bishop, who came from the CFL, and he's supposed to be a big pass rusher guy. But those type of positions, it's easier than a position on the offensive line, whether it be right guard or right tackle, to project and to actually say, oh, I like this guy, I'm excited to watch him. But you can't really say that a guy like Brent Vail or Dakota Dozier. But those guys might actually be more important to the outcome of the Jets season, especially now with Giacomini not playing. And again, that goes back to you're happy that veterans aren't playing in OTAs and training camp. Give me a guy on this roster that it could be an offensive lineman. Maybe you're one of those nerds, John. I don't know. But like, who's the guy on this roster that you're excited to watch the rest of training camp and then in the preseason games with the first one coming up this week?
The guy I'd like to see is Jalen Marshall, because all you hear about in camp is just what a stellar job he's doing. You know, he's catching everything, you know, he's making guys miss. So I'm really excited to see this guy in person for the first time. You know, it'll be on this Thursday, and then actually I'm heading up to camp. I'll be there next Saturday and Sunday. So that's, you know, that's the first guy that really comes to mind, is I want to see, like, and you always have to be careful when you talk about training camp, because you know, you can go back through Twitter, like in years past, and you see about some guy lighting up training camp. I mean, brace yourself for this one. I went back on Twitter and I found in 2014 all these writers talking of how great Dmitri Patterson looked in training camp and how Dmitri Patterson was going to surprise people. Well, yeah, he sure surprised people that year. You know, so you know, you have to temper your enthusiasm a little bit. You know, I think our writer Smack Teds made a good point a couple of years ago. You know, if you get into November and some guy strings together three great practices, would anybody ever say anything about it? You know, would you think, oh wow, this guy's really turned the corner? No, but it's just at this point, all we have is practice. So you hear this stuff being reported constantly. So you tend to overhype guys before they've really earned it. Even if a guy lights up preseason, I mean, how many preseason stars have there been through the years for the Jets, from Matt Sims to David Clowney to, you know, who knows who else? So, you know, you always have to temper your enthusiasm when it comes to these guys. But I am excited to be a surprise breakout player. It has to start somewhere, and that somewhere is training camp. So, you know, a guy like Jalen Marshall, I'm a little intrigued by him. And you know, maybe he can improve the team's special teams, which was such an Achilles heel last year. And that is a reasonable, you know, it's a reasonable hope. You know, maybe even if he's not like a great offensive player this year, maybe he can add a little juice to the punt return. And, you know, you think about it, the Jets, I mean, as much as anything, they missed the playoffs last year because their special teams were so awful. So, you know, you add a guy like that to the return game, you know, who knows what happens.
Right. And it could also be a gunner and that type of thing. And it's funny, you look at the Jets' wide receiver depth chart. I mean, you have the guys who are automatically going to make the team, Marshall, Decker, and Anunua. And you imagine Amaro's going to make the team, but we'll put him at tight end. But then you have a lot of guys, young guys with upside. I mean, Marshall is one of them. Sharon Peak. Kenbrell Tompkins is not a huge guy. But, like, that's a product of keeping four quarterbacks, is that the Jets aren't going to be able to keep a lot of the promising guys that maybe they would want to. I mean, again, it's a 53-man roster, and a lot of – I'm not saying teams think the 53rd man on the roster is a ton of upside, but are you in favor with what seems to be the current plan of keeping four quarterbacks, or would you rather get rid of Petty or try and find a trade for Geno or even cut Geno so you could be able to hang on to a guy? Or maybe you're just waiting to see if anyone in training camp forces your hand to make that decision.
There are two situations where I would not go with four quarterbacks. The first scenario would be if either Hackenberg or Petty looked like they were better than Geno. Now, from my understanding, that's not the case. It sounds like Geno is the clear number two guy right now. You know, if somebody's better than Geno, then at this point, you know, you might as well move on, because I think, you know, unless Geno comes in this year and plays well, he's probably not going to be with the team in a year. You know, at this point, he has to prove that he deserves to stay. Maybe, you know, for right or wrong, you may disagree with that, but I think that is the situation we're at. The second scenario where I would not keep four is if Petty just looked like he had shown no growth between this year and, you know, last year and this year. And that's because you have to keep in mind that now he has a full year in the system. He had a full summer to work, you know, kind of learn the nuances, learn to go through his progressions, work on his footwork. So if he's shown no progress, then I might get rid of Petty. I do not have a problem with keeping four quarterbacks, though. You know, you think about it, the quarterback position is the toughest position to project success to in this league. So essentially, when you get a quarterback, it's a lottery ticket, but it's also the most important position. You know, you can't win. I'm not going to say you need a great quarterback to win, but you typically need decent quarterback play, unless, you know, everyone's going to say Denver last year. Well, Denver had an all-time defense. You know, it was one of the best defenses ever, and I don't think that the defense is going to be as good this year, and I think they're going to have a tough time replicating what they did last year unless they get better quarterback play, which probably is not going to happen. You know, look at Baltimore. Everybody talks about that 2000 Ravens team, but look what happened after 2000. They wasted years and years of great defenses because they didn't have a quarterback, and that happened. That was up until the point where they finally got Joe Flacco. So I have no problem with keeping four quarterbacks, because what are you doing? I mean, at the end of the day, is it better to have an extra lottery ticket, or is it better to have, you know, an extra, you know, a sixth wide receiver, or, you know, an extra practice squad level safety? You know, if I'm going to keep a young guy who has upside, why not keep him at the quarterback position? You know, I just, you know, it seems to go against conventional wisdom, but I don't understand the conventional wisdom. Why wouldn't you give yourself, you know, last year, this team kept 10 offensive linemen. You're telling me that was a worthwhile use of their roster spots?
Yeah, yet they can't. They cut 10 offensive linemen, but yet not one of them have stepped up to be able to play right guard or right tackle at this point.
Heck, they had 10 offensive linemen, and they signed a guy off the practice squad when Mangold got hurt.
I mean, right, right. Exactly. And that's another thing where it's just, you say quarterback's the toughest thing to project. Offensive line is another thing that is really tough to project, but the Jets are going to need to find something, because I mean, this is very harsh to Fitzpatrick, but like, I probably shouldn't even say it just because I'll get so much hate, but like, just like, you know what, you sort of know what Ryan Fitzpatrick is, you know what Bruno Giacomini is. He's going to be a below average right tackle who is going to kill you at points and is just going to be okay at other points. The Jets need somebody that has more variance than that, and I hope somebody steps up, whether it be Brandon Shell, the guy that took in the fifth round, but they traded a fourth round pick for, or Kvail, or maybe inside with Dozier or Jarvis Harrison. But it's just frustrating that we can't really see if those guys are going to be good or not. I mean, unless you're a really expert film watcher. I mean, I like to think that I know what I'm seeing, but offensive line play is one of the hardest things to sort of break down on film. So we'll see in the preseason game coming up how much pressure these guys allow. But there's one more story that I want to talk about. I mean, story is sort of where that's being nice, and that's the Revis Marshall thing that happened this past week. So Revis and Marshall were going at it, and if you're following it on Twitter, that they seem to be going at it throughout the practice, and then at the end, Brandon Marshall took a swing at Darrell Revis. I mean, again, this is all language. Took a swing. I mean, for all we know, he probably just like hit him on his arm and like pushed him. But take a swing sounds better in copy, so we'll go with that. And everyone's having this con. I had my friend ask me, I said, "Do you think it's a good thing? Do you think it's a bad thing?" Like, I don't think it matters either way. I'm happy these guys are competitive and that they're fired up, and that's like something you'd expect from guys like this. But it just seems that people are trying to make a story out of this when there's really nothing there. But do you have another direction you'd like to go in with this story? Maybe something I haven't thought about, or are you just under the same impression as I am that this is really nothing and that people just need something to talk about?
Well, do you remember how much it impacted Seattle 2 years ago when Richard Sherman started that fight at training camp? oh yeah, it did not impact them at all. So yeah, you know, it's a nice story. There's two big name players going at it, but yeah. I mean, how much did the Josh Norman, Cam Newton fight affect Carolina last year? It's great. It's great. It'll sell, you know, it'll sell papers. It'll generate hits. You know, Marshall and Revis going at it. From what they understand, it was kind of more of a shove than an actual swing. I got nothing beyond that. What do you want? These guys are going out there. They're competing. You know, obviously things are going to get heated. That's football. Everybody knows that, you know, you're not going to... There are going to be moments in camp where you're going against the same guy every day. You get tired of, you know, you get tired of them. You know, you're going to get frustrated with them at points. You know, who cares? Congratulations, guys. You sold a bunch of newspapers. You generated a lot of clicks. Well done.
I got a better question for you. Let's say they actually did fight. Who would you take? I mean, I know Marshall's big, but like.
Yeah, Revis is scrappy.
Exactly.
You know, that's about as good of a question as who would you take on the field when Marshall's going out for a pattern. I'm not sure. I think, you know, it depends on the situation.
Right. I agree. I mean, I just feel like Revis would fight dirty. That's just me. I don't know. But again, I feel like the craziest guy always wins a fight. And I appreciate everything Brandon Marshall has done with awareness of mental illness and everything. But if you went up to a random person on the street and asked, is Brandon Marshall crazy? I think people would say, like, yeah, there's an element of crazy there. But so you either had the guy who's going to fight dirty wins or the guy who's willing to do anything. And that might be Brandon Marshall. But again, yeah, I think this actually is a more fun conversation and a better conversation than the one the rest of the media was actually having. But that's just going to about do it for this edition of the Game Crew Nation podcast. We're gonna try. I know we've been saying we're going to do this weekly, and it's just been difficult with everything else going on. John's a very busy man. It's all his fault, right, John? I mean, we don't need to get into it. We're just going to lay it on you. But we're going to try and get this done. And we after every week, we're going to send out a post asking for comments. I mean, you guys really showed up the first time we did it, and we really enjoyed that show. The second one, not as much, but maybe there's going to be more content now. But especially with training camp and preseason opening, we could go position by position, breaking down the young players, and especially after the preseason game coming up, we'll see what we saw there. But football is finally back. I think I could, even though the Hall of Fame game wasn't played, I mean, that's another story, but even though it wasn't even played, I think it's safe to say that everyone is psyched for the football season. Even though the Jets have a hell of a schedule, at least we'll know early if they're for real or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so that was John. This is Andrew. It's good to finally do this again. It's been too long, and we'll talk to you guys soon.